B'siyata d'shmaya, we're going to learn Shabbos Daf Kuf Chaf Hei. We're going to start from the top line of the Omud. Says the Gemara, and we're continuing with the halachas of Muktzah. Omar Bar Hamduri Omar Shmuel. A person called Bar Hamduri said in the name of Shmuel, Kroimiyois shel machzeles, shreds, strands that were part of a mat at some point, and now they've just become shreds, mutter letaltulam b'Shabbos, one's allowed to move them on Shabbos. My tama, why is it muta? Omar Rava said, Bar Hamduri asbirili. Bar Hamduri himself explained to me why it's muta. Machzeles gufa lemay chazya, a mat itself, what's it good for? Lichsuye be'afra, in order to cover the earth, or to stop some dirt on the earth, some excrement, some tzoya, or in order to stop the dust of the earth from dirtying and from rising. These pieces of the strands of the mats, that even though they're not part of the mat, they can still do what they were doing initially, and that is to cover some dirt, and therefore it's not mukta on Shabbos. And this seems to be following what Rabbi Huda says, that in order for it not to be mukta, it's got to have the same type of malacha as the initial mat had, which is to cover over the earth, to cover the dirt. And there's a discussion in the Mefarshim why he's lending itself to Rabbi Huda, but that doesn't mean that he held that way halachically. It happens to be that in this case, with the mats, the type of melocha that one can do with these kroimiyos are the same as what they were doing with the machzeles initially. Continues the Gemara. Omer Abzera, Omer Rav. Abzera said in the name of Rav, Shiyore prusmiyos. Little pieces that were once part of a talis, and now they've become worn away, and now it's just little leftovers of a talis. Osur l'taltalon b'Shabbos, one is not allowed to move them on Shabbos. Omar Abaye. Abaye says, b'matloinyos she'ein bohen gimel al gimel. We're talking about the little patches of that talis, which are smaller than 3x3 etzpois. D'loy chazion, they are not fit to be used. Loy la'anim v'loy la'ashirim. Not only would rich people not use it, but even poor people don't have what to do with it. And since there's nothing you can do with it, it's mukta and may not be moved on Shabbos. Continues the Gemara. Tanur Rabbonim. The Gemara is now quoting a braisa. Shivrei Tanur Yoshon. Tanur Yoshon means an old oven. It doesn't really mean an old oven. What it means is an oven that has already been heated once. And the way ovens were made, they were made of clay or earthenware. They would be heated up once to strengthen its walls. After that, it could be used as a regular oven. And here we're talking about that an oven that has the walls had already been hardened, and now that oven broke. But the pieces, since they've been coming from a hardened oven, they themselves can be used and they're fit for melacha. Harei hein kechol hakelim hanitlin b'chotza, divi Reb Meir. Reb Meir says that they have the status of a kli and may be used in a chotzer, and Tosfos says this is depending on the sugi we learned on Daf Kuf Chav Dalet, whether it's only in a chotzer or in a karmelis or in a rishus harabim. Reb Yehuda Oimir. Reb Yehuda says, ein nitlin. No, they're mukta, they're not allowed to be used. And we have to understand, what's the machlokes, Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda? Heid Reb Yosi, mishum Reb Elazar ben Yaakov. Reb Yosi testified regarding Reb Elazar ben Yaakov, el shivrei tanur yashon, shenitlin b'Shabbos, that he held like Reb Meir, that the broken pieces of a tanur yashon, an old oven, was allowed to be taken on Shabbos. V'al kisuyov, and the lids of the ovens, she'enoi tzorich beisyad, that they do not need a handle in order to be allowed to move them on Shabbos, and that's something we're going to see later on Daf Kuf Chavov. That's the end of the braisa. Asks the Gemara, b'maika mifligi, what are Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir arguing about? Omar Abaya suggested the following explanation. Bo'isin me'en melocha, ve'en oisin me'en melachton komifligi. We saw previously on Daf Kuf Chav Dalet, there's a machlekes Tanakama and Rabbi Yehuda, and we know that often Tanakamas, when their names are not mentioned, are Rabbi Meir, whether a kli that gets broken and the pieces, the broken pieces, can be used still, do we say they have to still be able to be used in a similar fashion that the parent kli, the kli that was initially whole, was used for, that these pieces can still be used in that fashion, and only then the pieces are still called a kelim and are not mukta? Or do we say no, even if they can be used for any other melacha, for any other task, it still contains the status of a kli? And that was a machlekes. The Tanakhama says, me'en melacha, any type of melacha, and Rabbi Yehuda says, me'en melachton. So we hear they're going l'shitosei. Va'oz de Rabbi Yehuda l'tamei. Rabbi Yehuda, in this braisa that says that you're not allowed to use the shvorim, the broken pieces of this old oven, is following his own opinion that says that it's only allowed to be used if it can still be used in the way that it was initially. Initially it was an oven, it was used to cook food. Now that it's broken, it cannot be used to cook and bake, and therefore it's muktzah. Rab Meir letameh, and Rab Meir follows his own opinion that says as long as they can be used for something, they're not muktzah. These pieces that belonged to a tanur and now are broken, they can still be used, and therefore they are not muktzah. Maskif la Rava. Rava is now asking a question on Abaye's explanation. Ihochi, if you're right that the argument in over here between Rab Meir and Rabbi Yehuda is that simple argument regarding whether broken pieces, in order to still be called kelim and not be muktzah, whether they have to have the same melacha that they had initially or not, adamiflegi b'shivrei tanur liflegu b'shivrei kelim ba'alma. So why are you focusing your argument on broken ovens? Why don't you just talk about any broken utensils, any vessels? Why are you zoning in on ovens? Elo omar Rava. Rava is going to give a different explanation to the argument between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. B'shivrei dehai tanur kumiflegi. They're arguing about a very specific type of oven, which we're about to mention, the one mentioned in the Mishnah in Kelim. And regarding that type of oven is where Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir are arguing if it gets broken. Nosnoi alpi haboyer o alpi hadus. V'nosan shom oven. So we have to understand, how are ovens and stoves typically made? A typical oven was a hollow, just a hollow round or square contraption with no base. It was put on the ground, and then they would put a fire on the ground and it would heat up the walls of the oven. What happens if you balance and you place this oven on top of a ditch, a pit, different types of a pit? There's one type of pit called a boir, another type of pit called a dus. They're very similar, just a boir is dug out, a dus is actually a contraption that's built into the ground. Either way, this tanur is resting not on the floor, it's just held in suspense. And there's a stone wedging in the tanur that it should be held in place. And there's a gap between the base of the pit, the boir and the dus, and the oven itself. How would you heat up this oven? You would put a fire on the base of this pit in the hope that the heat will raise up to this oven and heat it up. So the Mishnah says as follows, Nosne al pia boir al pia dus. If you balanced this tanur on top of a pit, but not san shom even, and where the pit meets the top edge of the boir, they put a stone there, wedge it in to hold it in place. Rabbi Yehuda Oimer imasik milamato v'hu nosik milamala. Tommy, if the ceiling around the oven is tight enough and the distance between the base of the oven and the floor of the pit is small enough that you can put a fire on the base of the pit and it will heat up the oven, then this has the same status as every regular oven that's fixed to the ground, and it's called a kli in Hilchas Tumah, it can become tomei. Ve'im lav, tohir. And if this oven cannot be heated up that way, and the only way you'd be able to heat it up is by putting a stone onto the base of the pit and putting the fire on the stone, and then the fire is actually going to be inside the walls of the oven, but since the oven itself cannot be heated up by putting the fire on the floor of the pit, therefore we do not consider this oven as being properly attached and part of the ground, and therefore it's not considered a kli. That's one of the unique halachas in Tumah is regarding an oven that it only has the title of a kli if it can be used and only if it's attached or it was attached to the ground. We're going to discuss that soon. And since over here it's too far away from the base of the pit to be called an annex and part of the pit, and therefore it's not considered an oven, and therefore in Hilchas Tumah it will not become Tomei, Imlav Tohir, it will remain Tohir. That is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. V'chachomim oimrim, v'chachomim say, hoil v'husak, mikol mokim, Tomei, since at the end of the day, somehow you can heat up this oven can be used to cook food and to bake food in it, therefore it does have the status of a kli, of an oven, of a tanur, and therefore Tomei, it will become Tomei. And we don't yet know what's the point of their argument. Ubamaikum iflegi, what's the nekuda of their argument? Bahaikra, they're arguing how to learn the following posuk. It says in the posuk, V'choyla sheyipil minivlosam olov yitmo, anything that a tomei animal touches it will become tomei. Tanur v'kiraim, an oven or a stove. Yutots, that can get smashed. Tmeim heim utmeim yu lochem, they can become tomei and they are tomei. It is a double term at the end of the pasuk. Tanur v'kiraim yutots, a type of demolishable oven or stove. Tmeim heim, they can become tomei utmeim yu lochem. Rabbi Yehuda learns as follows: mechusar netitza tomei, the only type of oven or stove that can become tomei is one which is a demolishable one. It's called netitza. Netitza means to demolish. A type of oven which is not demolishable is not going to be tomei. And what's called a demolishable tanur? Only one that's attached to the ground. Only something that's attached to the ground, it's fitting to use the term demolishing regarding it. So Rabbi Yehuda says that if it's mechusar netitza, if it's attached to the ground to the point that if you want to make it tohir, you have to demolish it, then such a type of tanur can become tomei. She'ein mechusar netitza, tohir. However, if the kli, if this tanur, this oven is not attached to the ground, which means that it's not able to be demolished because only things fixed to the ground can be demolished, such a type of tanur is not called a kli and is tohir. That's what Rabbi Yehuda says. That's what Rabbi Yehuda says, that im masik milamata v'hu nosuk milamala tomei, only if the oven can be heated up with a fire on the ground, it's considered attached to the ground, and since it's attached to the ground, that's called a tanur that is demolishable. If not, it's tohir. Rabbonon sovri. Rabbonon read the end of the pasuk. The pasuk says tmeim yu lochem, and we said there's a double loshen there. The pasuk says twice tmeim heim, tmeim yu lochem. They are tomei. They should be for you. The double term teaches us mikol mokim that any tanur, any oven is can become tomei and is considered a kli. Asks the Gemara of Rabbonon, Nami Oksiv Yutatz. Do the Chachomim not agree that the Posuk says that in order to make it Tanur Tohir after it became Tomei, it needs to be demolished, which means that only a demolishable type of Tanur can become Tomei? And now you're saying the Chachomim say that any Tanur, even one that's not properly attached to the ground, can also become Tomei. Says the Gemara, Hu Lehidoch Gisa. The words yutots are not going to be used like Rabbi Yehuda was using them as a kula to tell us that if the tanur, if the oven is not properly attached to the ground and cannot be used with a fire that's based on the ground of the pit, that then it's tohir. Rather, I'm using these words to say a chumrah. The salkadai to chaminam, I may have thought, kiven de chobrei ba'aror, since it's attached to the ground, kagufa da'aror domi, has the same halachas as the ground and the same halachas as anything else attached to the ground, that it cannot become tomei by virtue of the fact that it's attached to the ground. Kumash malon, the chiddush of tanur is that even if it's attached to the ground and therefore it's demolishable, it can still become tomei. V'idoch nami hoksiv tomei miulachem. What's Rabbi Yehuda doing with the extra words tomei miulachem? It seems that it's telling us that it can become tomei even when there would be reason to believe that it could not become tomei. So the Chachomim learned from there that even if it's not properly annexed to the ground, it can still become Tomei. What's Rabbi Yehuda doing with it? Hahu could Rabbi Yehuda mashmuel, Domer Rabbi Yehuda mashmuel, machleikus behesek rishon, aber behesek sheni afilu tolui betzavor gomel. What they're doing here is that the extra words, tmeim heim, tmeim yulachem, are teaching us that the whole argument of whether this kli can become, this oven, but does become Tomei, doesn't become Tomei, how attached it is to the ground, is only relevant whilst they are heating up and creating the oven. When you're doing the first heating up, that's strengthening the walls, Rabbi Yehuda says, in that case, if it's not properly attached to the ground, it's not a demolishable type of oven, and therefore it will not become Tomei. But once the tunnel or the oven has become hardened by heating it up when it was properly attached to the ground, or as we saw before, if it's on top of the ground, higher up, it's raised, but nonetheless a fire on the ground of the pit would suffice to strengthen it and make it into a kli. Once that's happened, it's got the title and it's got the status of a kli. And even if you now take this tanur and you hang it on the neck of a gomel, and somehow you use it that way, or you don't use it that way, either way, it will still have the term kli, and the only way it's going to lose its shame kli and become toir is if you actually smash it. Removing it and taking it off the ground, once it's got the term tanur, it will retain its term and its status of a kli until you smash it. And that's where the machlokes is, that Rabbi Yehuda says that the first heating up has to be firmly attached to the ground, and the Chachomim say, not necessarily. Oma Ula, v'hesek rishon l'rabbonon, according to Chachomim, they say it does not have to be firmly attached to the ground. They have a chiddush that even if it's attached to the ground, it can become tomei, in spite of the fact that it's attached to the ground. But we saw before, the Chachomim learned from Tmeim Yulochem that even if they're not attached to the ground, which means that even if the initial hardening of the tanur was done, Rabbonon afilu toli b'tzavur gomel, even if the initial hardening was done when it was totally not attached to the ground, it was hanging on the neck of a camel, it's still going to be considered a tanur, a kli, and can become tomei. So coming back to the beginning of our sugya, we had the braisa regarding shivrei tanur yoshon. We had the machlokes, Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda. So the Gemara says we're talking about this type of oven that was initially heated up when it was not properly attached to the ground. So it never became a kli, it never had the status of a kli. And therefore, Reb Meir says that it does have the status of a kli, like the Chachomim we just saw in the Mishnah. And the Chachomim say that it doesn't need to be attached to the ground. They learn from Tmeim Heim Lochem. Then if it gets broken, it's called the Shvarim of a Kli, and they're not Mukta. Rabbi Yehuda, however, says that will only become a Kli if it got hardened when it was attached to the ground. And this tanur that was not attached to the ground when it got hardened does not have the status of a Kli, and therefore if it gets broken, the pieces will be Mukta. Continues the Gemara. Maskif lo Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi is now going to ask a question against this second explanation we had against Rava. Rava explained the initial brisa, saying that the machlokes Rabbi Yehuda and Rav Meir of shivrei tanur yoshon is talking about the breakages, the pieces of this tanur that was not heated up the first time properly. Ihochi ad miflegi b'shivrei tanur liflegi b'tanur gufa. Why are you arguing whether this tanur got broken? Are the pieces mukta or not mukta? The machlekes Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir that we just mentioned now is whether this is called a kli even before it gets broken. According to Rabbi Yehuda, an oven only becomes and only has the status of the tumah of a tanur if it was first heated up when it was attached to the ground. He learns it out from Yutatz. And so to argue in a tanur itself, according to Rabbi Yehuda, this type of oven, which has not been heated up whilst attached to the ground, is not called a kli even before it's broken. And therefore it's mukta. And it's mukta even in its whole state. And according to Rabbi Meir, who says it is called a tanur, therefore it's called a kli, and it won't be mukta. Well, at least it will have the halachos of kli that we've learnt till now. Kli shemelachto le'isa le'tzerech gufo mekoymei, as we've learned previously. Why? That's what Rav Ashi is asking Rava. If you, Rava, are right, that the initial brisa of Shivrei Tanur Yoshon is because of the machlekas regarding how it became a tanur. Don't speak about Shivrei, don't speak about broken tanur, speak about a whole tanur. L'hashte tanur gufu Rabbi Yehuda lo yavamona shvarov miboya. And he's just strengthening his question and saying, according to Rabbi Yehuda, if when it's whole, it's not called a kli, it will go without saying. We can take it for granted that when it's broken, it's not called a tanur. So why do you have to speak about the broken pieces? Say that, talk about a whole tanur, and say that a whole tanur, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is not called a kli, and we'll know, we'll take it for granted that the shvarim are mukta. And here the Mefarshim, the Marsha says, why doesn't the Gemara answer? We need it according to Rav Meir, who says that a whole tanur is called a kli, and there's a chiddush that even the broken pieces are called a kli. So the Marsha deals with that. Elo Omer of Ashi. Rav Ashi is now going to give another and a third interpretation of the brisa we started with. La'olam kada omron mi'ikara. We're talking about the shvarim, the breakages of a normal oven, a proper oven that was made properly and, according to everybody, had the title, had the status of a kli, and it got broken, and that's how we explained the Gemara right from the beginning, that's how Abaya explained it. Uba'oysa maysa tapka. What did we say at the beginning? That the machlekas was whether oysin me'en melocha, or oisin me'en melachton. That's how Abaye explained it, that the machlokes is going to be whether it has to be able to be used for the same melacha or not. And then we asked a question on that, Rava asked a question on that, so why are you talking about a tanur? Talk about any kli. So now that's what Rashi is coming to answer. Rashi says that beforehand we assumed that a broken tanur cannot be used for heating up. No way. And therefore, the maximum we're left with is a machlekas, whether if it can be used for something else, is that called that it's still got the status of a kli or not? But now he's saying no. It's possible that the pieces of the broken oven can be used to bake on. What does that mean? Says the Gemara, ba'oyse ma'ise tapkot. Tapkot are tiles. And it's true that with a typical oven, it was a whole contraption, and they would put dough on the walls of the oven, they would put a pot on top of the stove, and that's how a normal oven would work. However, there's a concept of heating up tiles where you would just take some tiles, put some fire underneath it or next to it, heat them up, and then you can cook or bake on top of it. So we're talking here about where the pieces could be used somewhat similarly to the original oven, but not exactly. There are a number of differences between the way you would bake or cook on these tapka, on these pieces, to the way that you would cook in the original oven. So the question is that called melachton? Is it not called melachton? And that's what we're going to explain. Reb Meir ledvarov Reb Yehuda ko'omer. Reb Meir is talking according to Reb Yehuda. And he says as follows, ledidi, I Reb Meir hold, afilu bo'isin me'en melocha. I hold that you never need the melocha that you can do with the broken pieces that has to be similar to the original melocha. No, like we saw in the Mishnah on Kuf Chav Daled Amud Beis, as long as you can use it for something, it's not mukta. But you, Ela L'Ditcho, you Rabbi Yehuda will say it has to be me'en melachton. It only still retains its status of kli if it can be used in a way that was similar to the way the original kli could have been used. So Rabbi Meir says, at least Oydeli agree to me, miho at least, to be chahai gavna, that a broken piece of oven, that the pieces can be used to be heated up like a tapka, as you would heat up a tile, that melachtoyhu, that is similar enough to an oven that it's still considered as if it's a continuation from the use of the oven and is not mukta. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, I don't agree with you. Loidomi, there are too many differences between using a broken piece of an oven that's used similar to a tile and the way we would use an oven. Hosam, in the case of the oven, the fire typically is inside the oven. Hocha, in the case of this tile, you heat it up outside of the tile. There's no inside of the tile. Hosam, in the case of the oven, mu'umud, it's standing upright. The oven is a contraption that's standing up, and you put pots either on top of it or you put some dough onto the walls of it. Hocha, but in the case of a piece of the oven that's being used similar to a tile, lav mu'umud, it's lying flat. It's horizontal. And since it's very different from the the way that an oven is used, therefore it's not called me'en melachton, and therefore Rabbi Yehuda says it's muktza, and you're not allowed to move them on Shabbos. Continues the Gemara. Heyed Rabbi Yosi Meshumer Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. We saw in that brisa at the beginning of this sugya that Rabbi Yosi testified that Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, he ruled like Rabbi Meir, that one was allowed to use the broken parts of this oven that we're talking about on Shabbos. And also, that the lid does not need to have a handle in order to be allowed to be moved on Shabbos. Says the Gemara, Omer Ravina, Kaman mataltalinon ho'idna kisui de tanurei de mosa mechasya, deina en beis achiza. Ravina says that the custom was in the place called Mosa Mechasya, that they would move the lids of the ovens even though they did not have handles. So Ravina asked, who's this following? Says the Gemara Kaman, you want to know who? Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. It's following Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov that we saw here, that Rabbi Yosi testified in the name of Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov that one is allowed to use the lids or move the lids of these ovens even though they do not have handles. And in Mitzvah we're going to see more on this on Daf Kuf Chavov. Continues the next Mishnah. Ha'even shebekiruya im memalin bo ve'eino nifeles memalin bo v'im lav ein memalin bo. What's going on here? A kiruya is a shell, is the outer peel, the hard peel of a squash or pumpkin, whatever you call it. It's a large type of vegetable that's hollowed out. It's relatively light, and you want to use it to lift water out, to use it as a pitcher or a type of container that's going to be lowered into a pit to raise up the water. But because it's very light, it's going to float on the water. You're not going to be able to get it into the water and lift it up. So what did they do? They would take a stone. A stone is muktza. You can't do anything with a stone. It's called muktza machmas gufay. You put a stone into the shell of this squash, this pumpkin, or this kiruya, and the weight of the stone would lower it into the water, and then you would lift it up. The question is, are you allowed to use this on Shabbos or not? If the stone becomes part of the kli, then it's got the title, it's got the status of a kli, and therefore nothing is mukta. If, however, the stone is not part of the kli, then not only is the stone mukta, as all stones are, but the kli itself is actually going to be a base for the stone, and then it becomes a bosis for the stone, and then the kli itself is also going to be mukta. Says the Mishnah, Ho'even shebekiruyo, this stone that was supposed to weigh down the shell of this squash, im memalin bo ve'eino nofeles, if the stone is positioned in such a way, is fixed, is tied onto this shell, in a way that it's when it gets filled up, the stone is not going to fall out of it, then we know it's part, it's an annex to the kli, and the stone itself is part of the kli. Memalin bo, you're allowed to fill up with this on Shabbos. Ve'im lav, if however the stone is going to fall out, it's not properly attached, and the stone is muktza, and the shell of the squash is also muktza, it's a bosis. Ve'im lav, ein memalin bo. Another case, slightly similar, Zmeira, a branch of a vine. And we're talking here about a branch that has, on the top of the branch, is a type of a V-shaped, has two tongs, one to the right, one to the left. And because it's like a long type of branch that splits at the top, you can actually tie each end of this twig, of this branch, onto a pitcher. And that way, you can lower the pitcher down into a pit to fill it up with water. So we know a branch of a vine on Shabbos typically would be muktza. However, here where it's helpful and it's serving a pitcher, the question is it muktza, is it not? Says the Mishnah, Zmoiro shikshura betafiach, if on Erev Shabbos you tied this branch onto the pitcher, memalin baba Shabbos, it's part of the pitcher, it's got the status of a kli, it's not muktza, and you can fill up with it on Shabbos. Continues the Mishnah, Pkak hachaloin. Not like today where we have curtains, we have roll-down shutters. In the olden days, they used to close up doors and windows with shutters that would be removable. They would have a frame, a closed frame, and they would place it in the window frame. And when they were finished with it, they would take it off the window frame. That's called pkak hachaloin, a shutter of a window. And the question is, are you allowed to fix it? Are you allowed to put it into the window on Shabbos or not? And Rashi says there's an issue here of merza. It looks like you're being moisif ala binyan. You're adding onto the building. The window is part of the home. It's part of a building. And you're not allowed to build on Shabbos, nor are you allowed to add something to an existing building. The question is it called adding to the building or not? So, belazo imir bezmanshu koshur v'tolui. If this shutter is also connected, it's tied to the wall, which means there was a screw or a pin in the wall, and the shutter was tied to that screw, v'tolui, and the shutter was not resting on the floor and it happened to be tied onto the wall. No, it was hanging. It was not dragging on the floor. It was hanging from the hook. And then we say that it's already part of the building. Positioning it into the window will not be called moisif ala binyan, and poikin boy, you're allowed to close up the window with it on Shabbos. V'imlav, if it's not kosher v'tolui, also tied and also hanging, in poikin boy, you're not allowed to close the window with it on Shabbos, because it looks like you are creating or you're building an extension to an existing building. The Chachomim argue and say, bein kach or bein kach poikin boy, even if it's not kosher v'tolui, it's not merze k'moisif ala binyan, and you're allowed to close it on Shabbos. And the details of this last part of the Mishnah we're going to see in Mirtz Hashem on Daf Kuf, the bottom of our Omud, and Daf Kuf Chavov in the next Shir. Continues the Gemara. Tanan Hosam. We learned in the Mishnah, we're going to learn this later on, Daf Kuf Membeis. Even she'al pi hachovis. You had some barrels of wine, and there was a stone that was placed on top of one of the barrels of wine. Why was it placed there? You wanted a lid. You needed a lid, you wanted a lid, you just put a stone. But we know that this stone is muktzah. Stones are muktzah. So the halacha is, moto al tzido. The stone is muktzah. You can tilt the barrel onto its side and let the stone fall off. Vino feles, and the stone will fall off, and then you can take out of the barrel whatever you want. But the stone in and of itself is muktzah. Now, the Mishnah there carries on that if the barrel was amongst many other barrels, and tilting it over, you're afraid the stone is going to fall onto another barrel and break it, then the Mishnah says you can take this barrel, lift up the whole barrel and move it elsewhere, and then tilt the stone off. You're allowed to do that. That's what the Mishnah says. And in response to that, says the Gemara, Omar Rav, Omar Rab Ami, Omar Rab Yechanon. Rab Ami, we have to remember that. This is Rab Ami in contrast to Rab Asi soon. Rab Ami says in the name of Rab Yechanon, Lo Yishanu Elo B'Sheicheach. When are you allowed to take the barrel, lift up the whole barrel with the stone on top of it, and move it elsewhere and tilt it off? That's only if it was Sheicheach. If you forgot the stone there before Shabbos, you didn't intentionally put it there in order to stay there for Shabbos. Aval b'maniach, however, if you put it there l'katchila in order for it to be a lid on this barrel and you wanted it to be there, then na'aseh bosis l'davar asur. Then the barrel itself becomes a bosis, a base for a stone which is asa. And since it's the barrel is a bosis, you're not allowed to move the barrel at all. You're allowed to tilt it off. And that we have to understand why tilting is easier than carrying. But either way, to carry the barrel elsewhere, you're not allowed to do. Continues the Gemara. Rav Yosef Omer of Asi. Before it was Rabba in the name of Rav Ami. Now it's Rav Yosef in the name of Rav Asi, and also in the name of Rav Yochanan, says it differently. Lo yishanu elo b'sheicheach. If you forgot it there, then you're allowed to lift up the barrel and take it elsewhere and tilt it to the side and let the stone fall off. Aval b'maniach, but if you put it there, if you put the stone there in mind, you wanted it to be a lid and you wanted it to stay there, na'aseh k'kisui la'achovis. Not only are you... Does the barrel itself not become a bosis ledovara asa? It's not mukta bechlal, it's not asa. You do not even need to tilt it. You can lift up the stone with your hands. It's not got the status of a stone, it has the status of a lid. And a lid is not mukta. So you have quite an extreme machloikas here. Rabbah says in the name of Rav Ami that if you left it there intentionally, it becomes a bosis. You're not even allowed to move the barrel. you're allowed to tilt it where it is, but you cannot move it elsewhere. And Rav Yosef, in the name of Rav Asi, says that if you put it there intentionally, then the stone itself has the status of a kli. Omer Rabba, Moisvinin Ashmaitin. Now Rabba is commenting and saying, and is asking a question on his own interpretation of what he said. Rabba said in the name of Rav Ami that if you put it there, it becomes a bosis. He's asking a question from the Mishnah we learnt. Ho'even Shabakiruya, im Mimalin Bo Ve'in Nufeles. Mimalin Bo, we saw in our Mishnah that if you put a stone and you annex it to the shell of this squash, and it's going to stay there, which means it's not about to fall off. And since you did it intentionally, then you're allowed to move this shell with the stone in it on Shabbos. So you see, not like I, Rabba, said that if you left it there intentionally, it becomes a bosses and the whole thing becomes asa. Says the Gemara, no, or says Rabba, I'll answer that. V'loyi, it's not a question. Hasam, in the case of our Mishnah, kiven dehodka shavya doifen. Since you attached it to the shell of this squash, therefore it's considered as part of the wall of this squash, it's mamash part of the kli, and therefore it loses its status of a stone, and it's called a kli. However, over here, in the case we're talking about here, with a stone on top of the barrel, over there it's not attached to the barrel, and therefore, says Rabbi, in the name of Rabbi Ami, in the name of Rabbi Yechanon, the stone retains its status of a stone, and the barrel becomes a bosses. Omer Rav Yosef. Now it's Rav Yosef's turn to ask a question on himself. What did Rav Yosef say in the name of Rav Asi? That if you put it there intentionally, then it loses its status of a stone, and it's called a kli. If Moisvin on Ashmaitin is asking a question from our Mishnah, Im lav ein memalin bo, we saw that if the stone that's supposed to be helping this shell of this, of the squash, to go down into the pit, if it's not properly attached to the shell, and it's going to fall off when you fill it up, then it's all muktzah. The stone is a stone and it's muktzah, and the base of it is going to be considered a bosses. According to what I, Rav Yosef, said in the name of Rav Ami, in the name of Rav Yechanon, since I put it there intentionally, it should have the status of a kli. Why should the stone in the kiruya be different to the stone on top of the chovis? Says the Gemara, no, we can answer that as well. V'loihi. Hasam kiven deloy hotka bitule botla. Over there, where it will only serve its purpose if it's properly tied. If you didn't tie it onto the kiruya properly, and therefore when you fill up water with it, it's actually going to fall out, then you're making it clear from your actions that you don't intend it to be part of the kiruya to help it collect water. Therefore, it's a stone, and the kiruya will be a bosses for a mukta. However, here, just putting the stone on top of the barrel is more than enough to show that I want it to be a lid, not just a stone, and therefore it loses its title of a stone, its status of a stone, and is mukta. Continues the Gemara. B'maikum ifligi. This machlekas, Reb Ami and Reb Asi, whether if you intentionally put a stone on a barrel, do we say the barrel becomes a bosses and is mukta, or do we say the stone becomes a kli and is not mukta? What point are they arguing? Maro sovar bo'inon maisa. Reb Ami holds that in order for a stone to lose its title of stone and become a kli, you have to do a significant act. You have to do something significant. Just putting it onto the kli is not enough. And therefore, it's called a bosses. Umar Sovar, Rab Asi holds labor in on Maisa. I don't need a significant act, a significant deed to show that I want it to be a kli, and just putting it there is enough, and therefore it has the shame of a kli. Va'azdul Tamayu, and we've seen this, they're following their own opinions. Dechi Asa, Ravdimi, when Ravdimi came from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, Omer Abchanina, Va'omer La, Omer Rav Zeira, Omer Rav Chanina. Either Rav Chanina said, or it was said in the name of Rav Chanina, Pam achas holach Rebbe lemokim echot. Rebbe was once traveling to some place. Umotzon nadvoch shel avonim. He found a row of stones. Va'omer, bricks. Va'omer le talmidov, he said to his talmidim, Tzu, go out, v'chishvu, and have intent that tomorrow on Shabbos we're going to sit on these stones, we're going to use them to recline on, to sit on, and therefore they won't be muktzah, in order that tomorrow we can sit on them, we can move them, it will not be muktzah. And Rebbe did not didn't require from them that they perform an act to make to determine that they are now no longer considered as mirror stones without a use and are muktzah. Rather, they're considered as chairs, benches, and are not muktzah. Rabbi Yochanan Omar. Rabbi Yochanan says it's Srichon Rabbi Lemaisa. It was in the name of Rabbi Hanina. It was said that Rabbi just told them to think about it, to intend to use it to sit on Shabbos. Rabbi Yochanan says no. Rabbi actually required from them to perform an act to show that it was going to be used to sit on. Mai, what type of act did Rabbi make them do according to Rabbi Yochanan? Omar Lu, this was the machlekes Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Asi. Rabbi Ami says you need to have a very significant act. Tzu v'limdum, position them. Do something in their positioning, in the way they are, that it will be very clear, it's significantly clear that you're using this as benches. Omar Lu Rabbi Asi. Rabbi Asi argued with Rabbi Ami and said, Omar Tzu v'shifshifum. Here, Rabbi Asi holds, you do not need a significant act. It's enough to go and just wipe them down a little bit. And if you just wipe them, it's enough. So you see here, Rabbi Ami needs a significant deed. And Rabbi Asi doesn't need a significant one. So that's why they say the same here. Rabbi Ami says you need a significant deed. And therefore, Rabbi Ami says that just putting a stone on the barrel is not enough for it to become a kli. Rabbi Asi says you don't need something significant and just putting it on the barrel is enough. Itmar Rabbi Yossi ben Shaul Omar. Rabbi Yossi ben Shaul was actually arguing and said that the incident with Rabbi did not happen with a nadvach shel avonim with a row of stones, rather soyor shel kiris hava. It was a stack of beams. Rabbi Yochanan ben Shaul Omar, goshush shel sfina hava. Rabbi Yochanan ben Shaul says it was that this story happened that they came across a goshush shel sfina and they wanted to sit on it on Shabbos. What's this goshush shel sfina? As we've seen previously in the Masechta, that in order for a boat not to collide or not to get too close to the shore, or not to get stuck on any stones, they would have a long stick. They would put it into the water. And they would see that this how deep the water was. If it was too shallow, they would steer away from it in order not to run ashore. And if it was deep enough, they knew it was safe to go on. So this stick is quite important that it stays straight. They wanted to have an exact indication of how deep the water was. So Manda Omar Goshush, according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Shaul, who says that Rabbi allowed them to do, according to the opinions we saw before, either just to have intention or to do an insignificant act or to do a significant act, whatever it is, that if he allowed them to do that with the goshush, with this stick that was used, this pole that was used to check the depth of the water, then kolshkein soyer, it goes without saying that with a stack of beams, that he would have allowed them to do the same thing and to use it on Shabbos. However, Mando Omar Soyer, according to Rabbi Yossi ben Shaul, who says the incident happened with a stack of beams and not with this pole to check the depths, then Aval Goshush Kopid Olei. It could well be, according to Rabbi Yossi ben Shaul, then in the case of the Goshush, he would say, for that, it's not enough. And a person sets it aside and a person does not want to use such a goshish in order to sit on it because it's going to become bent and therefore you're not allowed to sit on it on Shabbos. It's muktzah. And the Ritva says that what the Gemara means is that in the case of goshish, everybody will agree you need a very significant maisa, significant act. Like with anything, if you do a significant act to show that you want this to become usable on Shabbos, then it won't be muktzah, and you're allowed to use it to sit on. But just to do an insignificant act, or just to have intentions to use it, that will not be enough in the case of goshush. Continues the Gemara. Zmoira shikshura, we saw in the Mishnah at the beginning of the Amud, that a branch of a vine that was connected, that was tied from Erev Shabbos, but tafiach onto a pitcher, nemalin baba Shabbos, you're allowed to use this pitcher and fill up with it on Shabbos. Says the Gemara. Kshura in. It's only if it's tied onto the pitcher. Loi kshura, if it's not tied, loi, then it's not become an extension of the pitcher, and therefore the twig, this moira, is going to be muktzon Shabbos. Leima masnisen de loi kubshim ben gamliel. So the Gemara is suggesting that this Mishnah that says that you need to tie it, it seems that you need to have a maisa, you need to have a deed before Shabbos. You have to do an act before Shabbos in order to say that this Moira is not Mukta, it's not just a random twig, a random branch, it's part of the picture. How do you show that? By tying it. And that seems not to follow Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. The Tanya we learnt in the Braisa, Charoyis shel Dekel, the branches of a palm tree, Shegidron le'itzim, you cut them down initially in order to use it for firewood. V'nimle chalei in the yeshiva, and then you decided you wanted to sit on it on Shabbos. Then in order for it not to be mukta on Shabbos, because firewood is mukta on Shabbos, you want to use it on Shabbos, then before Shabbos, tzorech likshar, you have to tie them together. You have to do an act, a proper maisa, and this maisa makes, readies them, is a hachona, it readies them to be used as benches, as chairs, and then it will become chairs and benches, and it will not be mukta. Reb Shimon says, "Ein tzorech likshir. I don't need to do an activity like that of tying." And our Mishnah says clearly that this Zemoira, you need to tie it to the picture. It seems not to be following Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. Om Reb Sheshes. Reb Sheshes says, no, our Mishnah could be even recorded to Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. Afilo teim Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. Hocha b'mayos skinon. Why do we need a case where you do a maisa according to Reb Shimon ben Gamliel? But mechuberes be'ovil. We're talking about a zmeira, a branch, which is still attached to its parent, which means still attached to the ground, to the body of the vine itself. And in order, and therefore, since it's attached, it's mukta. In order to have something that's mechuber, that's attached to the ground, to not be mukta, to be called a kli, for that you need to do something much more severe than just have an intention. You have to tie it. Yehochi asks the Gemara if it's tied. Is the halacha not that you're not allowed to use anything that's attached to the ground on Shabbos? If this Zemoira is attached to the ground, how are you allowed to use it when it's attached to the pitcher? Says the Gemara Lemato Megimel, is talking about that it's below three tvachim off the ground. We're obviously talking about that you want to lower the pitcher into a pit that's deep in the ground. And this Zemoira is within three tvachim from the ground. And the halacha is, we're going to see this in Erevin, that if it's with less than three tefachim off the ground, then you're allowed to use it on Shabbos. Rav Ashi Omar, Rav Ashi says, afilu teima betlusha, it could be that we're talking about even a zmoira, a branch which is already detached. Nonetheless, Rav Shimon ben Gamliel will agree that you need to do a proper act, gzeira shemo yiktoim, because if not, it could be that tomorrow when it comes to Shabbos, you're going to realize that this branch is too long, and since they're very soft, you're going to cut it down. You're going to cut it to size. If you cut it to size, you're going to be chayev for makeh bepatish. And therefore, he says you have to tie it to the pitcher initially and make it into a kli before Shabbos. However, in the case of the charoyos that we're talking about, Rav Shimon ben Gamliel was talking about the branches of the palm trees over there, since it's made to sit on, and there's never too long, too short, there's no risk of them cutting it down, and therefore, according to Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, machshav asagi, it's enough just to have intentions to use it to sit on, and that suffices. And Yemirtz Hashem, in the next shiur, we're going to start learning the next sugya.